World War II, the fact that Italy was part of the enemy, I mean, that caused difficulty. How was that experienced and lived with?
It was interesting. Didn't have much impact in, on the way people thought. It was different than the Germans. But, you know, I don't know whether you know it or not, but they resettled a great many Japanese in the United States. We had our own concentration camps, which nobody admits to, but they did the same thing to Italians that were in sensitive areas. Most people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And they certainly did the same thing to Germans. There were many, many Italian families that were in sensitive areas, and they were forced to, or where they thought they had problems. We didn't have any effect on any of that. We lived, as I said, in a largely Italian neighborhood. And as a matter of fact, it was kind of comical because they took Italian prisoners. They put them into Fort Hamilton right at the entrance to the Verrazano Bridge there, at the entrance to Brooklyn. And they used to let these guys out on weekends to go to Italian families in the neighborhoods for meals. And, you know, they never had it so good. You know, they were prisoners of war. They never wanted to go back. So I remember that instance, and I used to think it was hilarious, you know, because for prisoners of war, they were treated pretty good. They got cigarettes, and they got a good meal, a nice family to visit with. I remember there were many, many parcels that were sent of clothing and that kind of thing. So it was almost as if people didn't really believe that we were fighting, the Italians were fighting against the United States. And, you know, that was to be, people more or less thought it was a small group of people led by a fanatic in Mussolini, but generally, you know, their brothers and sisters that were still in Italy, they weren't, you know, involved to the extent where it had an impact on us. So I don't remember any of that. I do remember there was some pressure on the Germans, the German-Americans, and there was some activity by that group to support the Hitler. We never saw any of that in the Italian community. There was no support for what Mussolini was doing or for what Hitler was doing in the Italian community. And it was more or less looked at, I think, as Italy was dragged into the war and by some fanatical dictator, and that really is, you know, not our the way we would be. So we didn't see much of an impact of that. You know, if you want, I can talk a little bit about college, City College, which was a very difficult school, as was Brooklyn College. In those days, you were admitted by scholarship, and you had to have a total of 85 points, and you took half your high school average and half what you did on the entrance exam. It had to add up to at least 85 to qualify, and then you were admitted, depending on the number of places, by how high you scored. Sometimes if you had 85, you couldn't get in because there were so many other people that were smarter. So you had this kind of elite student body. It was largely minority. In those days, minorities were Italians, Jews, Hispanics, and blacks. But there were relatively few blacks, although there were some. And the school, City College, was located in Harlem. And 138th Street and Condon Avenue in Upper Manhattan. It had a wonderful campus with beautiful architecture, buildings that were built in the Ivy League tradition. And, you know, in the old days it was called the Harvard of the Proletariat. It had excellent teachers who were very well paid, but they couldn't do consulting or outside work. In other words, their job was to teach. But one of the things that made it different, because in most colleges that you went to, you were never taught by professors. You were always taught by some kind of student fellowship people or that kind of thing. But City College was very different, and every day in the quadrangle, people got up on soapboxes and talked about various issues. It's like being in Hyde Park full time at City College, and people would gather around and argue with the speaker, and politics was a big thing. They gave the daily worker out at every door of the campus free, I might add, and it was at the time that I remember very distinctly of the Army-McCarthy hearings. And it was also at the time that McCarthy declared the Rosenbergs to be Adam spies and called City College the Little Red Schoolhouse. That had a profound effect on everything. I'd worked hard for 4.5 years to get my degree in chemical engineering, and no major U.S. corporation came to interview on campus. There was all of the State Highway Department and Bureau of Standards, that kind of thing. And I went down to Columbia, which was just a few blocks away, 116th Street, and went to the Chemical Engineering Department, and the roster was full. Every major company was looking for people. This was like 1955. So that was a great disappointment to me. I wrote over 100 letters with a resume attached, got some interviews, but got almost all rejections. And there's some classic stories involved in there of how openly people exhibited prejudice in those days. I remember going to DuPont, and guy was interviewing me in his office and said to me, "You're from New York, huh?" He said, "I hate New York," he said. "It's full of spicks and niggers," he said. "Despicable people that urinate in the elevators. What do you think about that?" And, of course, I said to myself, he's testing me. You know, this is a Neanderthal attitude. He couldn't possibly be at this great company, DuPont. So I said, "Well, no, you know, that's not true." Whereupon he got absolutely livid. I found out he was dead serious. I didn't get that job. Then I went to Allied Chemical in New Jersey. They were in Morristown. They had just moved there. And I remember the head of engineering walking me between two buildings. And he said, "One thing that troubles me," he said, is you went to City College," he said, "where you probably associated with a lot of Jews and Negroes." And I said, "Well, yeah, there's quite a few in our class." He said, "We don't like them here." He said, "I'll always remember this." He said, "You see this country club next door? We bought this ground from them." He said, "You can't get in there," he said, "if you're Jewish or you're Negro." And he said, "You know, I'm not sure you'd feel comfortable here." Now, Allied was, in my opinion, the ass end of the earth. They always hired from the bottom quartile of the class and paid the lowest salaries in those days. And he was telling me I wouldn't be comfortable there. But I didn't get that job either, so it didn't matter. And then I remember going out to Columbia Southern, which later became PPG. I had written all of these companies. Remember, none of them came to class. And I said to the guy, "Why don't you come to City College and to interview? You invited me here for an interview." He said, "Well, we don't hire Jews, and most of the people you see there are Jews. Just straight, flat out. I mean, no hesitation at all." And then I went to Roman Haas and Arco and Atlantic Refining. And the classic story I like to tell there was that being very honest and scrupulously honest, billed them each $4 for the train fare from New York. Split it down, and wherever, got a letter back from Arco saying I had visited Roman Haas and they didn't really invite me, I just dropped in, so they weren't paying the $4. So they stiffed me for $4. I'll always remember that, and that's why I took such joy when I became president later. But anyway, finally, I wrote to a research foundation called the Battelle Memorial Institute. Mm-hmm. And I went out there and got an interview, and the guy said, "You're hired." And I said, "Oh, that's great." He said, "I need 10 more like you." And I said, "Chemical engineers?" He said, "No." He said, "Jews or Italians or Hispanics or blacks. We just got a government contract, and we got to hire up to our quota. So I got my first job filling a quota. And so I told him that I could easily get him 10 more, as long as he didn't care what the disciplines were. And they hired 10 more, 9 more, 10 total, kids from City College that year. And I was just at Ohio State last week, where I gave 2 lectures, one on leadership, and I had dinner with two of those people, one of whom became president of the Battelle. And so very, very interesting. There's also an interesting story there. One of them was a fellow by the name of Harry Pollack. And we were working there, and he wanted to use, as a consultant, the Professor Weiss from NYU. And his boss said, Harry, he said, Weiss doesn't sell. We don't want Weiss in the proposal. We need a Smith or somebody like that from Princeton or Yale or MIT. Whereupon Harry, who had been in the Army and experienced a great deal of anti-Semitism and so forth, accused his boss of being an anti-Semite, and a struggle ensued in which he hit his boss and knocked him against a brick wall, and his boss fell to the ground. I'll always remember this. And Harry came running into my office, and he said, I just killed Chastain, he said. I hit him in his head, hit the brick wall, and he's out on the floor. And I remember going into Chastain's office and first saying to Harry, Harry, you realize you're one of the first Jews they ever hired here, and they hired 10 of us from City College because we're minorities, and now you've ruined everything for everyone. And I said, you killed the boss? It's crazy. So I went in and slapping Chastain in the face, poured water on him. He was all right. But, of course, Harry was gone. As an employee, he went on to get his PhD in physics at Ohio State. So those were the early days, you know, when we had a very good time in Columbus and in Ohio. But it was a very prejudiced society, as most of the United States was. Remember, we invited a Nobel Prize winner to come on the staff there and he wanted to buy a house in a suburb called Arlington. He was Jewish. And they wouldn't sell to him. And he said to Battelle, unless you do whatever you have to do to get me a house where I want to live, I won't come. And he didn't come. So that was 1955. So people who say, you know, we haven't made a great deal of progress are just wrong. And we have made a great deal of progress. And we're kind of interesting. I had many similar experiences at ARCO, which I can go into later. But you know, it's to me, a lot of the basics were things where the love of the family, the strength of the family, strong desire for education, particularly by my mother, who wanted to go on in further her education but didn't have the opportunity. But she certainly made sure that everyone else did. But all the women in that family did the same thing. They all wanted their children to be well educated. On the cultural side, it was interesting that my oldest cousin, Bill Tarangelo, married a woman who was a nurse, but she was also a ballet dancer. And I remember her taking me to the ballet and to the opera and to different things. I remember her as a very beautiful woman, and she would take me to different cultural events and so forth. And I think a lot of my cultural interests developed from that. But the other thing that developed was really the ability in New York. I remember frequently taking the bus down Broadway, and later went from Broadway to Fifth Avenue and straight down Fifth Avenue. And in those days, you could go to an afternoon matinee show, a Broadway show, for $2 or $3. It was dirt cheap, and you know, you just walk in and got a ticket. But I always remember stopping in the various fancy shops on Fifth and Madison Avenue and saying that someday I'll be able to afford to buy something in one of these shops. And I still win, and I'm still waiting, but I'm getting closer. But I remember going to B. Altman, which was on 34th Street. And B. Altman's, and as a matter of fact, I have some of the original pieces I bought. B. Altman had a great collection of autographs and important papers, but also prints of famous artists. And so I started to buy some of these prints by Picasso and other people at B. Altman. And as a matter of fact, as I say, I have two that I've kept for 50 years. And when you look at, I look at it today and look at my taste in art, I wonder why I bought them. But it was kind of an introduction to. It was a great store, and an interesting store. And so, a lot of what I picked up in my knowledge on art and glassware and all of those things, furnishings and so forth, came from living in that environment in New York, which was a fantastic place. You could educate yourself just by visiting and walking around, and museums were terrific and so forth.
You were living at home, Margaret.
I was living at home. And I took the subway every day, which was an event. By the way, I think I've been on the subway twice since I left New York. Because when you take the subway every day for 5 years, for an hour each way, and mount the challenges of it in those days, you know, it was both interesting and challenging because there was a lot of violence on the subway. But you could sit on a subway car and see 5 or 6 different language newspapers. And in New York, you know, I don't know how many there are today, but in the early 50s, you know, every nationality had its own language newspaper, and you sat there and people were reading all these papers. And but there were always crazy things that happened on the subway. You know, I remember a man standing in front of me and mumbling and cursing, and he was holding onto the strap, and I could see that he had a huge stiletto strapped to his back. And I said to myself, what am I doing here, you know, with this guy standing in front of me and so forth. And one time I remember coming down 138th Street to the subway, and as just I got to go down the stairs, the doors on this car opened, and 4 men jumped out of the car, grabbed me and threw me against the entrance platform, along with a little guy who was walking next to me. And it turned out that that's when the Puerto Ricans had shot up Congress. And they really thought I was with the little guy who they arrested. I had my books in a bag, a duffel bag, which they seized, tore open, figuring there was a gun in it or something. And I'll always remember that. That was interesting because that immediate neighborhood near the subway was a Puerto Rican. But City College was interesting. You won't believe this when I tell you, but to make the traverse at night from Convent Avenue down the hill to Broadway, I would walk with my duffel bag, which was filled with books, which could be thrown at somebody who came out from a car to attack you, with a knife in one pocket with my hand on it, open, knife open. And you walk down the center of the street to gain a few seconds time over somebody who's hiding behind a car. And you did that for 4 or 5 years, and then you had to contend with all the craziness on the subway because you went to school late at night. So I never have never used the subway since. And once or twice, and I didn't have a good experience then. But it took over an hour to get from City College to Brooklyn, and from Brooklyn on sometimes 2, sometimes 3 different trains.
Who was in the, if you talk about the chemical engineering classes at City College, and how many students were there in your graduating?
In our graduating class, there were about 40. Which was a very large class. We started out with 100, 120 in the first, second year. But very few made it, well, a third made it through. And they were all kinds of people. And I still maintain contact with a handful of my who were my closest friends. And I still talk to them and see them occasionally. You know, they came from all walks of life. Many were Jewish. A lot of them were Italians and Catholics and so forth. We had one black kid in our class who graduated. Mostly all were classed at that time as minorities. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, they've gone...
probably all male.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely all male. It was interesting. They have gone to open enrollment, hoping to attract primarily more Hispanic and minority students. But what they've attracted are more white ethnic students. And so that program, for its ultimate purpose, I don't think it's been very successful. I might say City is a unique school. You know, we were at 150th anniversary dinner last year, and we have 8 Nobel Prize winners, of which 5 were at the dinner. Colin Powell was a graduate, graduated shortly after me, a couple of years. I once saw an article that said there are more chief executives from City College than there are from Yale. And I think it was about the third highest at one time number of CEOs who educated. Andy Grove, who's probably one of the richest people in the United States, was a City College graduate. Bernard Baruch, Jonas Salk, many others.
How was the chemical engineering curriculum itself? I mean, how would you evaluate that?
It was very difficult. It was traditional. They didn't stray much out of traditional chemical engineering. Graduate school, by comparison, was very easy. It was also interesting, you would graduate from City with less than a B average. Like, I was fourth in my class, but I had less than a B average. And you could be admitted to any graduate school with that average, because City was known to be an extremely tough school, extremely tough ratings, and so forth. Maybe my average was 84 or something like that. You know, and usually you had to be 85 or... They don't use numbers anymore, but I had no trouble getting into graduate school anywhere. But I didn't want to go to graduate school. I wanted to go to work because I wanted to get some money. I remember when I left City College, I went out and bought one of my first suits at a place in New York called Crawford's. Crawford's would be the equivalent of today's Man. Kind of thing, you know. It was an inexpensive store. I bought a suit, and I think I had a picture of myself in my graduating picture in this suit, which was a black or deep blue with a slight pink stripe, and then a pink and blue, a pink and black tie. That was all the rage in those days. But that was about the only suit I really owned. So I was anxious to get to work and do some things. I'd never driven a car. The family didn't own a car. So when I left school, I had to, one, learn how to drive, buy a car, you know, get a place to live, and pick up on some of the niceties that you get elsewhere. We were so busy, we didn't have time for a lot of the things. So I had to learn how to do all the dances and so on and so forth. Even went to Arthur Murray a couple of times. So, you know, the niceties of life were not something I experienced growing up. And when I got out of school, I had to learn all of those very quickly, and I did from that standpoint. So,
but you were graduating without debt.
I was graduating without debt. Tuition was $7 a year, $7 a semester, and $100 for books. So you had that, and so it was incredible. You think that the city was educating 100,000 people in those days for virtually nothing, and we sat around a table at the 150th anniversary dinner, and each person told about how much it cost them when they went there. And the oldest guy there was a stockbroker, his own company on a big board. He was in the 30s. He graduated in 39. they didn't pay a dollar or something, you know, 50 cents. Well, what he said was, I always remember this, he said, he got 10, I think they paid a dollar or something nominal like that. And he said, he got 10 cents a day for bus fare to get to school. He said, and he walked, kept 10 cents so he could buy something. And he said, but his mother gave him 10 cents every day for car fare. And so it was interesting. And of course, later on, it went up and people went on strike and so forth from that standpoint. But it was very, very good experience.
Tough. Yeah. Did you ever think of not being a chemical engineer, or were you? Was the curriculum the idea?
No, I never thought of not being a chemical engineer. You know, in those days, Arnold, the engineers were in great demand, so that's why it came such a rude awakening when nobody came to hire us. Mm-hmm. And I had good experience at Battelle. Worked with some very creative, inventive people, but I never strayed from the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. In going to City College, in a way, you were moving a long way from home, but in going to Battelle, you were really moving to a different world. How was that?
It was a completely different world. I remember going out there. I was just reminiscing about this the other day when we went. I have a picture of the first motel that we stayed at, and it was too expensive. I think it was $5 a night or something, $6 a night. We wound up at the YMCA, which was $3 or $4 a night. I always remember before we got an apartment, there were three or four of us that went out together, which made it nice. Mike Epstein and a fellow by the name of Irv Hess, myself, and Harry Pollack. Make a long story short, I was coming down in the elevator at the YMCA, and the man who was on with me reeked of shaving lotion. When we got to the first floor, he took one step forward and fell over. He had been drinking it. So I said to myself and to the guys, we got to get out of the YMCA. I mean, there's got to be a place we can find for $4 a night. So we rented a house. We got the second floor of a house in Grandview, outside of Columbus, and a woman's name was Ursula Ogden, and she lived on the first floor with her mother, and she baked rhubarb pies and used to send them upstairs to us. And we had the second floor, which had two or three bedrooms and a small kitchen and so forth, and we lived there as bachelors until we got, we went there and also moved to another place. It's amazing how certain things remain in your mind. We moved to a place called 1845B Northwest Court in Columbus, Ohio. I remember that address just like it was yesterday, you know. We're there for a number of years and then left to come to Philadelphia. So,
what were you actually doing at Battelle?
At Battelle, I worked for a man called Herman Mack. Herman Mack was a unique individual, and another man named George Saxon. Mack was an inventor and a very creative guy, and he used to bring the group together and throw out an idea, and the object was that everybody had to add to the idea. Well, I was new and I didn't know that, came to me and I said, well, that just is ridiculous, it won't work and so forth. Whereupon he threw me out. He said, get out of the room, get out. and yeah. I just started to work here. It's a Christonia. Afterwards, he came to me and he said, if you can't build on an idea, keep your mouth shut. He said, your comments dampened the whole inventive process. He said, now you'll get used to it. So. And so he was very creative. For instance, we worked on a process for non-fat potato chips back then, which is 40 years ago. And we were successful in making non-fat potato chips. We cooked them in a fluid bed of salt, no oil. And it turns out that they were a complete, absolute bomb in the market. We test marketed them because people really like the taste of the oil, not the potato chip. So we had to keep adding enough oil back in to the point where it became ridiculous. But while I was there, I became an expert